You're listening to Drake in the Morning
with Danny, Wes, and Sid
on 98.1 The Max.
The paper is getting a little bit more difficult to embrace, I have to say. I'm sorry about that. But
it's a little thinner.
It's thinner, and it's old news, and the inserts from the local communities are weak old news and things like that, which I'm sure
my kids. My kids will not pick up a paper. They have to have everything on the phone.
And I hate to pick on anybody down there, but it just seems to be, it's tough on all of you, I know, but at least you're employed.
That's true. So we're still putting out a paper every day.
Yes, you are. And I think that's it'll get better with time, we hope. But either way, it's online and people go there and read the stories and David publishes them. His columns and the ones that still remain are in all editions, I presume, in some form or fashion. Three stories this past week. I have to say that I did not really focus in on the story of Mark Giannini, this rape thing that was in the news last week. When I saw Steve Farese, who is a well-known lawyer in this part of the, you know, when you really mess up, you go to him or Leslie Ballin. That's been my...
Two of the best defense attorneys in town.
And I presume that they are well-paid and that they get results.
They do.
That's why people go back to them.
They do their jobs.
I was absolutely dumbfounded in 2017 to hear an attorney say in front of a courtroom and television cameras that females were the weaker sex and are pretty much asking for it.
And they're lying.
And I don't know how...
And they're good at lying because they're the weaker sex.
Exactly. They have a gift for that. I don't know how even greed can allow someone to say that and let them sleep at night. Is he married? And I wonder how that went over at the house. This guy is a good lawyer, I'm guessing. But that is one of the most disgusting, discouraging things in 2017 I've ever heard anybody say.
I called it shameful, and I think it was. Look, Steve Farese is one of the most intelligent attorneys in town. He's a really excellent defense attorney. He knew exactly what he was doing. He was representing his defendant as best he could. It was a strong. The evidence against Giannini was strong but not conclusive. So what do you do if you're the defense attorney in a rape trial? You do what every defense attorney does. You try to impugn the character and credibility of the victim.
But are there
What was she drinking? What was she wearing?
Yeah.
You know, what's her motive? How much money does she have? What's she after? All that came up in this trial, one thing after another, to try to impugn the character and integrity of this young woman. But Steve took it a step farther.
Yes.
It wasn't enough that he had to impugn the character and integrity of this one woman. He had to impugn the character and integrity of every woman by making this blanket statement saying that not only are women good at lying, but they're good at lying because they're the weaker sex.
And I don't know if that was a calculated, prepared kind of response or if it just came off the cuff. Nonetheless,
I don't think anything Steve Farese says in court comes off the cuff. I think everything he says and his partner says is calculated.
And as good as he may be, and I hope I never have to, you know, use his services, but I'm sure that his record of winning is pretty good. But that to me, you know, there are so many movies that show these guys at work, the Pelican Brief, you know, being one, and they paint the other person as being the biggest piece of garbage on earth, and it's their fault. And their client didn't do anything wrong. But this one really got the attention of people locally.
And nationally. People are very upset.
I saw this nationally. The day it happened, it was on several websites. What's the result of it? The end game? Or was there
one? What's the result of him? Well, his client was found not guilty.
Yeah.
So whether that particular gambit worked or not, I think the larger issue is that we're talking about rape here, and unlike any other crime, rape is mostly unreported in the first place.
Yep.
30% of rapes are reported. So just imagine if only 30% of murders were reported or 30% of armed robberies. That would be insane. Nope, that would never happen. Why is it that 70% of rapes go unreported? Well, this is one of the reasons.
Yep.
It's because for whatever reason, through time, we have assumed that the woman who claims she has been raped, she has to prove her innocence instead of the other way around. And that is very, very difficult on any woman who's in this situation. If you look at the statistics, they're just crazy.
Only 3 of 10 in America rapes are even called into police. Only 1 of every 100 are prosecuted.
Now imagine if 1 of every 100 murders were prosecuted.
We got a lot of murders
out there. Or 7 of every 1,000 murder suspects were eventually convicted. That's the rape stats. Now, on top of that, we've been dealing with this issue locally about the rape kits.
Yep, 12,000 of them.
12,000 rape kits went unreported or ignored over a couple of decades. And this is not just a Memphis problem. It's happened nationally,
exactly,
too.
Yes, that was my point. And so Amy Weirich and her team, from what I can gather, have been making a good bit of progress.
They've been doing a great job. Yeah. They have tested just about every rape kit. I think there's about 600 left that haven't been tested yet. But so many of the problems remain. So many, about 150 women, either the victims or the rapists themselves, have died in the since the rape kits were taken. So, you know, you can't prosecute them anymore.
So what is the genesis of, let's go off on a tangent for a moment, the story last week of the 40 people who are suing? And what are they suing over? They can't find the kits, or they can't find the person involved, because the lawsuit was 40 people.
Well, this is a new batch of 40 women. There was
not
an original lawsuit
backlog.
No, it's all the same. So there was this 12,000 rape kit backlog, and it was announced in 2013. And then when it was announced, some women got together and said, this is untenable. We're going to take this to court. So they sued. This is still in the court process. So 40 more women have now come forward and saying, we were part of this group of untested rape kits and we want action taken. Amy Weirich, like you said, Amy Weirich and the police department and the Rape Crisis Center have been doing an incredible job going through all of these kits, testing all of these kits, finding all these kits in the first place, testing them, putting them through the process, trying to find ways to prosecute these people. And there are prosecutions underway, but there are so many kits that were there too long. They just haven't been tested. Well, there wasn't enough evidence to continue the prosecution, one problem after another. And the larger point is, why? Why was this allowed to happen? Why were these kits ignored? And I think it goes back to the original problem, which is what Steve Reese brought up in court, is that for whatever reason, we tend not to believe a woman who's been raped. We don't believe her. We believe there's something she did or said that she somehow, even subconsciously, provoked or encouraged it.
Yeah, but which is just, it's just wrong. And I suppose that he carries no burden of shame and doesn't care as long as he won the case.
Well, one of the things he said after when reporters asked him about the comment, he said, look, smart people know what I was doing and they know what this is about.
It so, still doesn't make it okay.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't see how you can go there. I mean, I think you can represent your client with dignity and be noble about it and say, he didn't do this and here's why. But to impugn every woman on earth and saying every woman on earth is good at lying.
I don't know the guy. He may be a good guy and a good lawyer, but that to me was just unacceptable.
And my final point was
inexcusable.
It's already unlikely that a woman is going to come forward and say she has been raped. It's very unlikely she's going to do that anyway. But when you add this on top of that, when you say that, this is what's going to happen to you in court and this is how it's going to go. Well, what woman wants to go through that kind of trauma?
But how did they overlook the fact that the guy had scratches on his body, was carrying an expired sheriff's badge and a passport in his pockets?
When the police showed up to investigate the scene, they couldn't find Giannini initially. He lives in a big house in Eads. They couldn't find him. After about 40 minutes, he showed up. He was sweating. He was obviously distressed, and he had his passport on him. Now, I don't know about you. I don't really carry my passport around.
Not usually.
Around the house. He also had a DeSoto County Sheriff's deputy badge, which apparently he'd been given sort of an honorary thing. And he had scratches all over him, and the DNA test was strong against him, but not conclusive. It showed about
96.3 is pretty damn close.
That it was probably him.
Yeah.
You had strong evidence against him. So what do you do if you're the defense attorney? You have to impugn the character
you have
integrity
to go
of a woman.
For the absolute lowest blow you can possibly go for, and you win the case. I suppose that I don't know. I just couldn't live with myself with that kind of a comment. The point to be made in summary is that this guy remains in jail, indicted on charges of raping two other women.
Right, which is information the jury, this jury could not have.
Right.
And that's legally, that's the process, and that's fine.
So the jury, in summary, bought the allegations or the case made by Mr. Farese.
Look, and you know, this is not to say the jury did the wrong thing. The jury listened to all the evidence, and they were there, and they took it all in, and they discussed it, and they decided that there wasn't enough evidence, that it wasn't, there was a reasonable doubt. And that's Steve Farese's job, is to raise that reasonable doubt in their minds. He did a good job. They did their job. The jury voted to say he's not guilty. And we have to respect that process. But the larger point here is that time after time after time, this is what happens when women come forward with these issues. The process is stacked against them.
Which is why, in part, they don't come forward.
Exactly.
I mean, there's the embarrassment. There's the shame to begin with. And then when you have the courage to go do it, this is what you get in return. Amy is here tomorrow, the Shelby County Attorney General. So I'm sure she can speak to this. I'm not sure how much, but her comments, you know, she was not pleased by any of this, nor was anybody else, I don't think. And I don't know. It just seems to make a mockery of the justice system in general, and just the way things get done. I don't know. It's just a very uncomfortable story, and that makes you angry. Our guest from the Commercial Appeal, David Waters, that's where you still work. Or do you work for the USA Today Network?
I work for the Commercial Appeal in Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh, okay. I just checked.
Whoever signs my checks is somebody else, I suppose. But
will you tell somebody that we don't care what goes on up in Chattanooga? Please.
We've made the case.
The other great story, and well, they're both great, from Thailand via Germantown with love, is a really sweet story.
So this woman in Germantown, lives in Germantown, she gets this box in the mail. It's a relatively big box from Thailand. She doesn't know anybody in Thailand. She hasn't ordered anything from Thailand, so she's a little worried about what might be in this box.
Might be Thai stick in there, for all she knows.
You never know these days. So she takes the box outside to open it. She's a little fearful, opens it up, and there's a letter inside, and there's about 200 little handmade dolls. And the letter is from a teenager in Thailand who found this woman's name and address, and I'll tell you why in a minute, who made these dolls, these 200 dolls, handmade, hand-sewn, sent them to this woman in Germantown to take to Nicaragua. Now, this woman in Germantown happens to run a little nonprofit. It's kind of like her mom-and-pop nonprofit. Every year, she takes a group of doctors and nurses and pharmacists down to Nicaragua for a week. They treat about 1,000 people in these remote villages, bring them all kinds of meds, and do great work once a year. Somehow, this teenager in Thailand found out about this program and wanted these dolls to go to these kids in Nicaragua. And to me, it just shows how small the world has got. You've got a kid in Thailand sending dolls to a woman in Germantown to take to kids in Nicaragua. Mm-hmm. And it's just it's a sweet little thing.
It really, really is. It's it does give you a moment's hope for mankind.
Right. Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that that's why we need to be telling these stories, because, you know, we're just inundated all the time with bad news.
Well, we just went from, you know, rape.
Right, what a transition, yeah.
To you know, that very, very kind.
But the news, you know, I mean, the nature of the news is things change. This is what has changed. This is what's happened. This is what you need to know. Well, you need to know when bad things are happening. You need to know when the floods are coming, or when the tornado's coming, or when the hurricane's coming, or when the bad guy is coming. You need to know these things about what your government is doing. But we can't let that sort of color our world and say that everything is bad all the time, when in fact, most of what happens out there every day is actually good.
That's a really, really good point, and a point we should not forget. The problem that people like you and I have who are in jobs like this, and I have found myself getting back in the habit of sitting at my desk, going from news website to news website,
right.
until I get pissed off enough to go to bed.
Yeah,
and then I go to bed mad, and right. and I wake up madder, and I go on and I watch this stuff on television, the insanity that ensues there, that I don't know if there's any credibility to it or not. It's all bad news. It's all bad news by design. I'm tired of the whole fake news thing, but I am convinced that the manipulation and the agendas of these people are real, and that it will make you crazy if you let it.
Yeah.
But the answer, I guess, is just not to watch it because it's horrible. But there are so many good things happening. We've got to keep our head on right and
find
the sweet spots, you know, nature and books and art and your kids and your puppies and the nice things. Because God Almighty, if you don't, you're going to be consumed, overwhelmed, and leap off the nicely lit bridge downtown.
Well, I think the media also has a responsibility here. We have to sort of change what we define as news. And I think we have to see stories like this
kid
from Thailand as a news story. It's important information for people to have. It may not be as important as what the president's doing today, but I think it's all part of a piece. And the piece is that people out there are trying to help each other every day. And we should be reporting that too, because that's part of what's happening in our community and in our world.
It doesn't sell newspapers, and it doesn't make people watch TV. If it bleeds, it leads. Get up some morning with me at 4:30 and pop on your choice and look what leads.
Oh, I know.
Today should have been game five tonight or the mayor's new budget. But in lieu of that, it was a shooting or a fire or some nonsensical story that was not news to anybody except those involved directly. It happens every day. It is as predictable as clockwork. And that's how the tone of the day is set.
Right.
And there are four or five of those back to back to back until we get into the delightful day of weather. And then we're back to more of this crap.
Well, instead of getting up at 4:30 in the morning and turning on the TV news, turn on some Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young.
I can't because I would want to go back to bed and sleep and enjoy the music.
Right.
So I have to get properly angry to come do this, which doesn't take very long.
It's kind of like your game prep.
Exactly. You're getting on your game face.
Yeah.
And it takes about a half hour to watch it and get really angry. And then come up here and bitch. And it's going pretty well.
You're doing fine.
So
to break the mood.
So if the government shutdown happens this weekend, I'll bring you some food if we can find any. Because I guess the shutdown will paralyze the world, right?
That's what they tell us.
Okay.
It has how many times before?
Oh, about once once a year. And it's a complete joke. And
I wish there was a way to just shut down certain parts of the government.
Yeah.
You know, like if you just shut down
could speak.
Congress and the White House.
Yes.
Just for a couple of weeks.
Let the mail keep going.
Right. Let everything else keep going. We got our military working.
Military working, but make anybody working, but on Capitol Hill not be able to speak.
Right. If you're going to shut down the government and put other people out of work, it ought to just go back to you. You ought to take that responsibility and say, you're not going to get your check, and you're not going to get your health care as long as this government shut down.
And we don't want to hear you say a word. You aren't allowed to speak. If it's shut down, so is your mouth.
I'm for that.
Yep.
Bumper sticker. Let's get it made. David Waters, thank you very much. Sure. Read David in the Commercial Appeal online or in the printed version. It's a paper with words on it.
Email us anytime at mail@drakeinthemorning.com.